Chapter 4. It lay strewn upon the banks of the river Grismarie, like the festering carcass of some colossal sea beast, dredged up from the pits of the ocean to die upon the shore. The once gleaming walls of the city were now broken, charred black in places by fires that had raged unchecked, or had toppled when the foundations had been devoured by the boggy landscape. Smaller structures, beneath those tumbled-down walls, the immense stone blocks driving the shops and hovels that had clustered in their shadow deep into the mire, so that only the occasional wooden strut or shingle protruded from the quagmire. The rotting remains of towers could be seen beyond the wall, the forlorn remnants of once proud castles from which the descendants of Lord Landowin had once ruled. To the north and west of the city, great cemeteries sprawled, vast mausoleums and tombs meant to endure through the ages, now crumbled and cracked by the twin evils of flood and earthquake, and by the neglect that had afflicted all of Mousillon. Beyond the walls of the dead city, all was foul, stinking marshland, a filthy bog of mud and mire formed by the river's frequent floods. The giant shantytown that had sprung up around the walls of Mousillon during the Dark Age of Bretonnia was now half sunk into the mire, second-story floors now level with the mud as the swamp consumed the floors beneath. Roofs peeked out from the morass, black croaking crows and grunting gray gulls, making their nests in the ruins of chimneys and gable windows. Near the river, the last remains of quays and docks could be seen, half sunk into the mud banks that had built around them, the waters of the river many yards from the ends of the piers. Boats and ships of all shapes and sizes were likewise trapped in the mud, their broken hulls displaying jagged gashes and splintered wood. The shore of a siren's island could have been of no greater grimness than the decaying port of Mousillon. From the quays, a great stretch of crumbling warehouses and workshops sprawled, reaching back towards the city walls before completely slipping back into the mire that had devoured the shantytown. Here, a number of crude groben houses had been built, a structure employed by only the most backward and poverty-stricken within the empire. Little more than tents, crafted from swamp reeds and driftwood, the tiny plumes of smoke rising from the structures suggested that they were not without their denizens, lairing within the mud like river vermin. The two bounty hunters stared down on the miserable city from a small hillock. They were on foot now, their horses and mule left with a farmer some distance from the city, one whom the promise of gold and the threat of retribution had made certain to take good care of the animals. Olgrin had grumbled about the tactic, but Brunner had informed his companion that it was unwise to bring the animals too near the blighted city. In a place as poor and desperate as Mousillon, horseflesh was as prized as Mootland steak.
"What a filthy-looking place,"
Olgrin commented, rolling his shoulders to ease the weight of his axe.
"I've burned down goblin villages that were more pleasant to look upon."
Brunner turned and stared down at the dwarf. "This place is more dangerous than any goblin hole," he told Olgrin. "Keep your eyes and ears open. The people who live here are desperate, miserable, and without conscience. They'd kill a stranger simply to boil the leather in his shoes." Brunner caressed the grip of his pistol.
"Make no mistake, friend Balax. You're going to earn your 1,000 gold. "You speak with the voice of experience,"
the dwarf observed, a tone of suspicion in his voice.
"I do,"
Brunner returned, marching down toward the river bank.
"I have been here once before, though it was a long time ago."
Olgrin hurried after his companion, knowing that he would get no more from the close-mouthed killer. The dwarf was somewhat cheered by the notion that Brunner had risked the dread city once before and emerged alive. Then the relief drained from his heart, as the dwarf wondered whether the bounty hunter had brought someone with him on that occasion as well, and whether his companion on that venture had likewise escaped the city. A dirty, foul-visaged fisherman had ferried the pair of hunters across the wide expanse of the Grismory, poling his flat-bottomed skiff across mudflats where barely a foot of water covered the filth. For his services, the gap-toothed old wretch had been paid a pair of brass coins by the stern-faced Brunner. A pitiable sum back in the Empire, but something approaching a fortune for the dejected humans who cringed in the shadows of this cursed city. The fisherman had instantly thrust the coins into his mangy cloak, then shook his head as his passengers disembarked, hopping from the skiff to the rotten remains of a pier that lay close by. In his many years wrenching a living from the filthy waters by the bog, the old man had escorted only a few travelers into the city. He'd yet to see any of them leave. But, with the pragmatic survivor's instinct that had kept the fisherman alive in so blighted an environment, he decided that the wanderings of fools were no concern of his. Without a backward glance, he poled his skiff back into the morass and toward the deeper, cleaner waters of the Grismory's far bank. Brunner led the way, carefully negotiating the treacherous ruin of the old pier. Beneath the bounty hunter's tread, the rotted boards groaned and bent, reaching down toward the bottomless muck beneath them. Once, pressing his weight upon a seemingly sound plank, the bounty hunter had been startled by a sharp crack. Instinct caused him to press backwards, restoring his weight on the opposite foot. The board upon which he had pressed snapped as neatly as a dry twig, the jagged ends slipping down into the gray mud. Within a few seconds, the broken plank sank completely into the morass and was lost to sight. Behind him, Olgrin Balax whistled appreciatively.
"Whoa! Now that's some nasty stuff," the dwarf exclaimed. "Even the tar pits below Karakadrin don't work that fast."
Olgrin leaned forward, spitting into the greedy slime.
"Maybe you'd prefer to go first," Brunner commented, extending his hand to indicate the dozens of yards of treacherous walkway yet to be traversed.
"I've always heard that dwarves have a keen sense about unsafe paths."
Olgrin stepped back, setting the head of his axe against the pier, crossing his arms and resting them on the weapon's butt.
"That's true enough down in a decent mine or a tunnel. We can feel the changes in the rock and in the air that let us know when something's wrong. But with this..."
Olgrin gestured with his bearded chin to indicate the bog all around them.
"This isn't so much earth as water masquerading as ground. Only men would be foolish enough to build in such a place. So I'll be quite content to let a man risk his full old neck figuring out what can be walked on and what can't."
Brunner turned away, stretching his leg to test a plank to the other side of the recently created gap. Finding it firm, he stepped across and proceeded to progress along the dilapidated pier.
"At some point, Olgrin, do you intend on earning your half of the bounty, or would that be an unwise assumption?"
the bounty hunter called back. Olgrin bristled under the comment, slinging his great axe back over his shoulder and following after Brunner with awkward hops and leaps.
"No dwarf has ever accepted charity from anyone."
Olgrin snapped, fighting to maintain his balance as he jumped across another gap left by a rotten board. The dwarf stared at the hungry mud below him for a tense moment before regaining his footing.
"And no dwarf ever took payment unless he earned it fairly,"
Olgrin added, his voice somewhat uneven, as he considered how quickly the plank had been devoured.
"Don't concern yourself on that count," Brunner stated. "Unless Musilon had changed a great deal since I was last here, these mudflats are the least of what this city will throw at us."
The bounty hunter pressed on, a series of jumps placing him several yards ahead of his diminutive companion.
"Now, here's a pleasant thought,"
Olgrin grumbled to himself. He stared back at the gray mire.
"If that bastard had mentioned this gobbing muck, I'd have told him to go hang himself."
A quarter of an hour later, the end of the pier was within a dozen feet. Several times, the bounty hunters had suffered a close call, treacherous planks shifting or breaking beneath their weight. Twice, Brunner had to lift Olgrin from the filth, the dwarf's desperate cries alerting the bounty hunter to his companion's distress. Only the timely speed with which Olgrin had planted the head of his great axe into a support had prevented the dwarf from slipping entirely beneath the muck. It was with visible relief that Olgrin beheld the relatively solid ground that rose beyond the end of the pier.
"Tell me that we have to cross that filth on the way back, and I'll cut your throat here and now,"
Olgrin snarled, wringing yet another clump of mud from his beard.
"If I never see that devil's porridge again, that will be soon enough."
Brunner ignored Olgrin's mutterings, his icy eyes instead watching the crumbling warehouses and dilapidated shops that crouched and slumped near what had been Musilon's waterfront. The killer smiled grimly as he spied a shadow move within the darkness of one of the doorways.
"In a few minutes, you may be only too happy to see this sludge again. At least with it, you know where the danger lies."
Olgrin scratched at his unkempt beard, ignoring the other bounty hunter's cheerless comment. As he pawed at the matted, muddy mess, his eyes fixed upon a small shape scrabbling across the mud flats. He pointed a stubby hand at a tiny apparition.
"Looks like we should have engaged that cat as a guide,"
the dwarf laughed.
"He seems to know the safe places."
"He is not heavy enough to sink," Brunner replied, only shifting his gaze for a second to observe the small animal. "If he stops for even a second, the mud will slurp him down just as hungrily as it tried to get you."
The bounty hunter kept his voice even, his stare steady and regular. The last thing he needed was to let the three or four shapes he'd seen moving inside the wasted innards of a wine shop know they'd been seen.
"Besides, he's got problems enough of his own."
Even as Brunner spoke, the dwarf watched in astonishment as a dark, loathsome creature wriggled its way across the muck. It was not entirely unlike the cave eels he'd seen beneath the World's Edge mountains, but it was much larger, and its scales much darker, its back sporting a fringe of spike-like spines. The ugly thing moved with a strange, sideways undulation that kept the smallest portion of his body in contact with the mud, lending it a speed that the bedraggled cat could not hope to match. The dark-furred feline howled in fright as the grotesque snakefish reached it, the creature's long jaws snapping close about the animal's scrawny neck.
"Hashut's bold beard,"
the dwarf swore.
"What madness is this, where fish hunt cats?"
"Better have that axe of yours ready," Brunner said, his eyes still studying the rotting structures of the waterfront. "We could be next on the menu."
Olgrin cast a curious eye on the bounty hunter, but did as he was told, releasing the snaps that held his throwing axes in their holsters, firming his grip on his trusty great axe.
"How many?"
the dwarf whispered.
We won't know until they attack, Brunner replied, taking the first step from the pier.
His boots squelched into the muddy ground, but the earth was firm enough beneath his tread to walk upon.
Might be a dozen, might be 100.
Damn it, Brunner, the dwarf hissed. You've a bad idea of fair odds. I've met slayers who wouldn't look for fights that uneven.
Brunner lifted his repeating crossbow from its sheath across his back, ensuring that the weapon was loaded and ready. The smile on the bounty hunter's face seemed only half-joking when he addressed Olgrin's concerns.
If things get too bad, we can always run. Then they might only go for the slowest one.
For long, 10 minutes, the two warriors negotiated the winding, devastated streets of the waterfront. Everywhere the crumbling, decaying wretchedness closed in upon them, filling their lungs with the rank stench of rotten fish and human sewage. Vacant-eyed warehouses considered them like hungry giants, the broken boards of their walls grinning at them like jagged teeth. Workshops, and what might have once been the homes of merchants and ship captains, sagged and slouched at awkward, impossible angles, and imagined even by the eccentric architects of Miragliano's famed Leaning Towers. A filthy thing, Olgrin took to be a scrawny dog, scurried down an alleyway, the bony remnants of a fish gripped in its mouth, but when it turned back, the dwarf shuddered to see a child's face, though he would still swear the limbs the creature loped away upon were not those of a man. Furtive sounds, like the scrabbling claws of rats, followed the two hunters, dogging their steps like an audible shadow. Soon, Brunner and his dwarf comrade were catching glimpses of things, regarding them from the narrow necks of alleys and the dark recesses of rotted doorways. They were the most wretched of rags, mismatched scraps of cloth, fur and leather wrapped about their scrawny limbs and twisted backs. Many faces were hidden beneath sackcloth hoods and thick scarves, others displaying their pockmarked, rash-ridden faces openly. The two killers watched the ruins pressing in on them, having no idea how many miserable scavengers lay hidden within. Brunner paused as they neared what had once been a cobbled market square. The stones were obscured now by the thick layer of semi-dried mud that coated them, the fountain at its center long ago broken apart by the probing roots of weeds. A scraggly-looking man stood near the fountain, a long billhook clutched in his mitten-covered hands. The wretch turned his thin, boil-ridden face toward the two strangers. The eyes were as pale as boiled eggs, yet there was a cold, loathsome vision within them. The two bounty hunters simultaneously gestured at the dreg with their weapons. Brunner aiming his crossbow for the greasy forehead, Olgrin hefting his massive great axe in a motion that promised a swift and messy demise. The old wretch seemed unconcerned by the display, standing his ground with a deliberate calmness. As the two killers strode closer, they could smell the rotting odor crawling from the man's diseased skin, see the watery filth oozing from his sores. The apparition did not seem to mind their scrutiny, favoring the two with a gap-toothed idiot's grin. Brunner noted that the man's eyes were focused intently upon himself, their bleary eyes matching his own icy stare. Then, for the briefest of instants, the eyes flickered, looking away from the bounty hunter, gazing instead on the ramshackle guild hall that fronted upon the square. In an instant, Brunner spun, firing his crossbow as the first of the lurking ambushers leapt from the building. The target of his first bolt was garbed from head to toe in slimy rags, and as the bolt smashed into its chest, the cry that sounded from the creature was more like the chirp of a frog than the scream of a man. A second bolt ripped through the throat of the wretch immediately behind the slimy frogman, pitching him back to the ground to gargle upon his own fluids. Beside the bounty hunter, Ulgrin leapt into action, charging into the sudden surge of ragged attackers that swarmed up the narrow street they had so recently traveled. A ropey limb holding a fishbone knife flew off into the mob, even as its former owner howled in agony. The frenzied mob pressed forward, heedless of the dwarf's brutal axe, stabbing at him with crude spears and such base weapons as bits of jagged glass and sharpened stone. Ulgrin sent a leprous woman's head flying from its shoulders, only to have a spear-wielding hunchback push the still trembling body aside to stab at his prey. A twisted man with eyes on the sides of his head followed close on the hunchback, slashing at Ulgrin with a morning star fashioned from a belaying pin and a number of nails. Brunner sent the remaining bolts from his weapon into the dregs swarming from the guild hall, dropping one with every shot. With the weapon spent, and no time to reload, he let it fall to the ground and drew his pistol from its holster, calmly exploding the head of a screaming wretch who hoped to cave in the bounty hunter's skull with a stone hammer. With even this weapon expended, Brunner pulled Drake's Malice from its sheath, the sword slashing outward the instant it was drawn, spilling the guts of an axe-armed attacker. A snarl that might have come from some feral beast, were it not for the few syllables of the Bretonian tongue mixed into it, caused the bounty hunter to twist his head around. The wretch that had awaited the two men in the square was now entering the fray, spinning the billhook with an elaborate yet murderous skill. Brunner watched the madman advance with misgiving. The billhook was effectively a polearm, giving the villain a much longer reach than the bounty hunter's sword. And with a pack of howling peasants closing upon him, Brunner did not have the time to spend warding off the wretch's attacks until he could move in for the kill. Snarling an oath of his own, the bounty killer palmed the small pouch of salt hidden within his glove. Puncturing the fragile bag, Brunner cast a grainy mineral into the face of the approaching enemy. Brunner's enemy gave voice to an undulating cry of such agony and mortal terror that even the two bounty hunters were momentarily stunned. The attacking mob fell away, creeping back from the ghastly tableau. As the wretch's bloodied hands fell away from his face, Brunner could see the steaming muck that dribbled from his now empty eye sockets. Whatever mutating taint had afflicted the dreg's eyes, it had reacted most spectacularly to the touch of clean salt. The screaming man crumpled to his knees, grinding his face into the muck in a vain, desperate effort to soothe his horrible injury. The two bounty hunters used the momentary respite to retreat deeper into the square. Standing back to back, the two killers watched as their malformed attackers began to regroup. The mob spread out into the square, chittering and cackling with voices both mad and inhuman.
"I thought you said you were going to make a break for it,"
Ulgrin mumbled to the other bounty hunter as the disfigured mob began to encircle them.
"I reasoned that a braggart like yourself wouldn't keep them occupied long enough to do me any good," Brunner responded.
A huge, lanky brute, with something crawling inside his mouth that was too thick to be a tongue, was eyeing the bounty killer, a curved scimitar-like blade, fashioned from a piece of anchor, gripped in his meaty paws. The dreg opened his mouth to shout some battle cry, or else to simply howl in animalistic fury, when a black-feathered arrow suddenly sprouted from his forehead. The big brute fell instantly, crushing a smaller wretch who failed to leap away from the toppling corpse. The mob set out a loud cry of terror and fear, racing back into rotted buildings and down narrow alleys, many of them dropping their makeshift weapons in their disorderly rout. Olgrin set up a loud laugh, chiding the retreating murderers for their cowardice. Brunner paid more attention to the small company of armed men who had appeared on the other side of the square. There were 7 of them. 6 of the men were on foot, garbed in suits of rusted chainmail, over which they wore tattered black and gold mantles. Half of the force bore Bretonian longbows, quivers of black-fletched arrows hanging from their belts. The other 3 carried antique halberds that looked to have seen a few too many wars in their centuries of use. The 7th man was mounted, his steed a midnight black, that reminded Brunner of his own warhorse, Fiend. The plate armor that clothed the mounted knight was likewise black, and the tabard and caparison of man and horse, though in better repair than the liveries of the men-at-arms, was black and gold. The knight gestured with a gauntleted hand, causing the archer who had fired to return to his position among the other soldiers. Then the mounted warrior fixed his attention upon the 2 bounty hunters.
"It is seldom we receive visitors to our humble city."
The knight spoke his Bretonian with a lilted, antiquated quality.
"I fear that the prejudices and superstition of the peasant rabble are not very accepting of strangers."
The knight continued. "Empty bellies and starving children have a habit of doing that," Brunner retorted. The knight chose not to take offense to the surly remark, shaking his helmeted head sadly.
"It is true," the knight admitted. "Our fair city is far from its glory days, and the minds of the common folk are plagued with doubts and petty fears."
The knight straightened in his saddle.
"Still, I apologize that you should be met with such discourtesy."
"We accept your apology," Brunner agreed, turning to recover his weapons.
"Though it might ring a bit more sincere if laced with a touch of gold,"
Olgrin informed the knight. Brunner froze in place, looking closely at the mounted warrior. The knight's face was hidden behind the steel of his great helm, betraying nothing of the emotion that might be playing across his features. The knights of Bretonia were quick to take offense to any attack upon their honor, and Brunner had begun to suspect that this strange black knight was more than a trifle mad. The bounty hunter braced himself for the explosion of indignation and outrage he was certain would soon issue from the knight. Instead, the helmeted head regarded Brunner exclusively, ignoring Olgrin entirely.
"If you are seeking employment, you may find the situation in Mousillon slightly less than vibrant,"
the knight informed him.
"Still, for a man of such skill with the blade and such ruthless determination, I might have a position available."
The knight chuckled inside his helmet, a sound that reminded Brunner of the sickening, insane giggle of the jester Corvino, who had summoned the demonic Mardrag to wreak havoc upon the city of Ramus.
"You see, we had a very nice view of the whole thing. You impressed me, and I couldn't very well let a scum butcher your bones. Not when you might serve a nobler cause."
"You saw the whole thing and did nothing to stop it?"
snarled Olgrin, fingering his axe. The men-at-arms tensed, the archers knocking arrows to their bows. The knight waved a dismissive hand.
"What is past," he proclaimed. "I had to make certain of the quality of my hirelings before discussing such complexities as payment."
The mention of payment stilled any further protest on the part of Olgrin. Brunner nodded his head in agreement that the issue was settled. He could even appreciate, in a way, the twisted efficiency of such an exploitation of the murderous wretches. Still, it sickened him to have slain men whose bellies had growled even as they shrieked their half-hearted war cries. It sickened him even more to see such suicidal desperation so ruthlessly utilized.
"What is your proposition?"
the bounty hunter asked, keeping his distaste to himself. The knight looked askance at the crumbling buildings all around them, peering into the shadows.
"This is no place to talk. Every mouse has ears, after all. You will follow me to a place where we may speak more freely and more openly."
The place to which the Black Knight led the bounty hunters was just within the massive stone wall that had once surrounded the city. Here the ground was more solid, scraggly bushes occasionally poking through the sickly soil. The buildings were less dilapidated than those beyond the wall, though they were still a far cry from being well maintained. Holes in the plaster and wood walls were haphazardly patched with dried mud and straw. Gaps in tile roofs were stuffed with bundles of thatch. The few denizens of this inner district that the men encountered were still miserable to look upon, but their limbs seemed to match, and what covered their backs bore a passing resemblance to clothing. The stamp of desperate poverty was still omnipresent, however. One old woman, upon sighting the approaching warriors, fished her meal from the boiling pot resting on the ground before her, cradling the half-cooked rat to her chest with a scalded hand. At length, amidst the misery, the knight stopped before what must once have been a prosperous eatery and inn. The black-clad figure dismounted his warhorse in a single fluid motion, then turned his obscured face back toward his guests.
"We can talk here,"
the knight informed the two bounty hunters.
"The owner of this establishment can be trusted to keep his mouth shut."
Again, the sinister chuckle echoed from within the knight's great helm.
"Not that a man without a tongue can do much talking anyway."
As if dismissing whatever threat Brunner and Algrin might pose to him, the Black Knight ordered his soldiers to remain outside, to guard his horse, and ensure that the meeting went undisturbed. Inside the inn, the men found a large common room, a gaggle of mismatched chairs and tables staggered about the floor. A large fireplace, from which many of the hearthstones and most of the ironwork had been stripped, dominated one wall. A collection of mangy, lice-ridden animal heads adorned another. A faded painting, depicting some past lord of Musilon riding out to war, rested behind the bar, green spiderwebs of mildew already picking at the pigment. The knight sat down with a bold flourish at one of the tables, indicating with an armored hand that his companions should take seats beside him. The warrior looked away, stabbing a finger at a little, gnome-like man who stood dejectedly behind the bar. The man hopped into action, snatching up a chipped crystal glass and a clay bottle, hurrying to place both before the knight. Brunner noted the extremely pale liquid that the knight poured into the glass, wondering for a moment just how much water had diluted the brew. He also noted that the knight made no motion to remove his helmet or lift his glass. And, of course, the fact that the innkeeper had brought only one glass was not lost on the two bounty hunters.
"You spoke of a position," Brunner inquired, after the uncomfortable silence had persisted for too long.
The knight seemed to rouse himself from some inward contemplation, lifting his helmeted head to stare at the bounty killer.
"What is it that you need us to do?"
The knight leaned back in his chair, his armored bulk causing the wood to groan in protest.
"That should be obvious," he said. "I need you to kill someone,
someone who has made the atmosphere within Mousselon quite unpleasant of late.
I wouldn't think it would be possible to make this place any less pleasant,
muttered Olgrin, picking splinters from the tabletop. Again, the knight chose to ignore the flippant comment.
There is a malcontent, you see, the knight stated. One whose interests are at odds with those of the other noble houses yet left to Mousselon. Often violently so.
The knight left the vision of murder and battle hang in the air a moment before resuming his speech.
As you may know, after the heresy of Duke Maldred, the realm of Mousselon was effectively destroyed and the position of Duke abolished by the king. Our best farmlands were given over to Lyonnais, and the rest left to rot and fester in whatever fashion the gods might deem fitting. Of course, those of us who were left, after Maldred's madness and after the Red Pox had run its course, tried to rebuild our land, with what was left to us. It is more by sufferance and indifference on the part of the king and our neighbors that we are allowed to do so. If any of them felt that our humble city was becoming again a threat, it is not impossible that a king might declare a new errantry war to dispose of us for once and all.
All very interesting, I am sure, Brunner interrupted. But how does all of this concern me?
I was just coming to that, the knight responded, a faint suggestion of annoyance in his lilting voice. This miscreant I have mentioned, one Marquis Marimond, who has made himself a threat to the other noble houses of Mousselon, and indeed to the city itself. Like a bloated leech, he preys upon this city, sucking the life from it, scavenging every scrap of power and control he can seize. From his castle in the northeast quarter, Marimond's ruffians have made themselves the horror of the peasants, exacting a grueling tribute from them, leaving nothing for the rightful rulers of the districts to collect and claim. His thugs do battle with our soldiers in the streets. Dozens of bodies are dumped into the bog each day, with no end to the strife in sight. But worse than all of this, Marimond has started to call himself Duke Marimond, and begun to cast his eyes beyond the walls of the city. That would bring down the wrath of the king upon us, and we cannot defend ourselves against his ire.
Why not attend to this Marimond yourself? Brunner asked.
We have tried, the knight stated frankly. He does not fight his own battles, but leaves them to his champion, an honorless brute named Corbus, who has yet to even be scratched by our best knights. His blade is swift, and his strength is that of a titan. The heads of a score of heroes who fell before Corbus now grace the gates of Marimond's castle. And then there is his enchantress, a dire witch who now serves the Duke Marimond and his twisted ambitions. Her spells warn him of any ambush we ready to capture him. Between Corbus and the witch, Marimond has managed to keep himself beyond our reach.
It sounds like a challenging prospect, Brunner said. He lifted himself from the table. But I am no assassin. I have come here looking for a man, a stranger to Mousselon like myself. I have no time to intrude upon local politics.
The Black Knight's mailed fist came crashing down with such force upon the table that a rotten wood crumbled beneath it.
Damn your insolence, sellsword! You will do whatever I tell you to do.
The fiery words seemed to explode from within the great helm, echoing like the roar of a troll. Brunner's hand closed about the hilt of Drake's Malice, drawing it several inches before he was even aware of the motion. Olgrin had fallen from his chair, startled by the violent outburst, yet he was quick to regain his footing and his axe. Yet the tirade was over as soon as it had begun. With elaborate calmness, the Black Knight began plucking wooden splinters from between the steel plates of his gauntlet.
"For this service, I shall pay you the princely sum of 100 gold crowns,"
the knight spoke, as though Brunner had never even taken issue with his offer.
"As for this man you are looking for, I can tell you that yourself and your little friend are the first strangers who have found sanctuary with any of the nobles of Mousillon. Perhaps the man you're looking for has found shelter within Marimon's household. Otherwise, you should look to the graveyards and the bellies of the ghouls for this man you are seeking."
"It is a simple plan, really," the knight informed the two bounty hunters.
"Sadly, we need an unknown quantity, such as yourselves, for it to work properly. I had a very promising Norsken who happened into our city to serve the role I would hire you to play, but sadly the fellow could simply not heed my advice to stay off the streets at night. The ghouls, you understand."
Brunner had the impression that the face behind the helm was favoring them with a mocking smile.
"Luckily, everything is still in place, just waiting for a man of your particular skills. Tomorrow, in the old Haymarket, I have arranged for one of my squires, a man named Feather, to be collecting tribute from the corn farmers. Of course, Marimond will get word of this and send his champion and a gang of his animals to secure that tribute for himself. I'm afraid that quite a fight will unfold when Corbus discovers that the information regarding how many men-at-arms are with Feather is a bit, shall we say, on the conservative side. That is where you come in. You will intervene in the fight on the side of Corbus. Impress him enough, and he is certain to offer you a position with Marimond's guard."
A chortle of anticipation bubbled from behind the helm.
"That will get you inside the castle, and get you close to Marimond. The rest I shall leave to you."
The knight waved his gauntlet in a dismissive manner.
"Bring me the scoundrel's head when you are finished, and you shall have your payment."
Brunner glared at the arrogant armored warrior for a moment, then thought better of pursuing any confrontation with him. The bounty hunter simply nodded his head, turning on his heel and marching for the door. Olgrin hesitated a moment, then hurried after his comrade. When the two stood once more upon the desolate street, it was the dwarf who spoke first.
"Surely you don't mean to accept that braggart's offer?"
Olgrin inquired.
100 gold crowns, he scoffed. "That might be pretty money, but not for someone searching for 2,000.
"He might be right, if he's telling the truth," Brunner observed as he began to lead the dwarf away from the inn.
A pair of the black and gold garbed soldiers followed them at a discreet distance.
"Gobineau had a definite purpose in mind when he rode for this place. If he is not taken up with any of our patron's friends, then perhaps he had sought shelter with Marimond."
"What if that other possibility is what happened?"
growled Olgrin.
"What if the fool got himself killed, or eaten by the scum that infests this dung heap?"
Brunner smiled down at the surly dwarf.
"In that case, we're wasting our time."
"Ah, well," Olgrin sighed. "I suppose splitting 100 is better than splitting nothing at all."
"Oh, he won't pay us," Brunner told the dwarf, speaking from the corner of his mouth. "He can't afford to. Even if we do all that he hopes, even if we kill Marimond, Corbus and the witch, our friend back there won't pay. They have strange notions about honor and nobility in Bretonnia. A knight may kill another knight, but for some untitled commoner to strike down even the most hated nobleman is a great affront, something that simply cannot be tolerated."
Brunner shook his head.
"No, If we were to kill Merrymand, we'd be putting a death mark on our own heads. Besides, the bounty hunter continued, I don't like being hired like some gutter-crawling assassin. There are some lines even I won't cross.
So, what do you propose we do?
Olgrin demanded. I'll go ahead with our friend's plan. Brunner informed him. It's far too good an opportunity to gain entry to Merrymand's castle, to pass up, and it will convince our friend back there that I am following his plan.
I couldn't help notice that you were referring only to yourself,
Olgrin pointed out. His face contorted into a scowl beneath his disheveled beard. You, my friend, will need to find another way into Merrymand's castle. After all, we might not be able to get out the same way I got in. I'd prefer to have another route open to me.
And why does the dwarf get to find this magic entryway?
Olgrin grumbled, kicking a loose corner of paving stone down the narrow street.
I've been here before, the bounty hunter reminded him. The castles of Musilon all share one common feature, something of a rarity in Britonia. They were built with a drainage system, a network of underground culverts that empties into the Grismery. Who better to send sniffing around for a tunnel than a dwarf?
Olgrin Baylax nodded his head as he considered the wisdom behind Brunner's plan.
You always were a cautious character, the dwarf declared. But I see the sense in these schemes of yours. When do I go looking for this secret slop chute?
When it's dark, naturally.
Brunner returned, looking past the dwarf to stare at the two soldiers trailing after them. Better chance of losing any unwanted hangers-on that way.
One way or another,
Olgrin replied, his fists clenching about the heft of his axe.
Just make certain you don't get yourself killed. At least not until we've found Gobineau, if he's there and found a way out of the castle.
Night had fallen upon the cursed city, casting its darkness upon the rotted ruins and festering slums, like some dour priest drawing a shroud over the face of a corpse. Screams and laughter sang out from the desolation, insane sounds that seemed loudest where the night and life were least. The broken, burnt-out ruin of one castle, which Brunner had been told once belonged to Duke Malford, glowed with an unearthly shine. From its darkened halls, the faint strains of a waltz seemed to issue, the ghosts of the perpetrators of the infamous False Grail and his court of the damned, forever cursed to haunt the mouldering passages and corridors. Olgrin Baylax crept through the blighted streets, cursing once again the folly that had made him set aside the past and join forces with Brunner. The bounty hunter's plan had sounded feasible enough in the light of day, but now, with the desolate city seeming to crawl with unnatural, unholy energies, the dwarf was regretting ever agreeing to Brunner's plan. It was not the dark that so disquieted Olgrin. Indeed, he had spent most of his life in tunnels and mines, far less illuminated. It was the wispy shapes he'd seen dancing about the collapsed balconies of castle towers, the disembodied merriment that rang out from the most dilapidated and abandoned buildings. The dwarves were a people who venerated and worshipped their ancestors. To them, the thought of dead spirits walking the earth in perpetual madness and misery was an obscenity beyond sacrilege, a horror that plucked at their very soul. The dwarf shuddered as furtive noises issued from an alleyway to the left. Olgrin thought of the grotesquely oversized rats he'd seen beneath Zufbar, their fur matted with filth, their chisel-like teeth gleaming
with the fresh blood of their prey. The warrior shuddered, bringing his great axe down from his shoulder so that he gripped it across his chest. He'd already seen the loathsome, subhuman corpse-eaters once this night. A pack of the ghastly scavengers had erupted out of a similar darkened alley, swarming about the dwarf, clawing at him with their long black claws, snapping at him with their fanged mouths. Olgrin had stood his ground before the ghouls, removing the arm from the boldest of the pack and taking the head from one of its friends. That had taken the fight out of the others. They had sullenly withdrawn, retrieving the corpses of their former comrades. Olgrin guessed that burial was far from their intentions. A scream had sounded from the street behind him. Turning, Olgrin had found that a soldier detailed to follow him had maintained his vigil, even after the dark had settled upon Musilon. The poor wretch had fallen prey to a second pack of ravenous ghouls, the scrawny, leather-skinned monsters pressing upon the man-at-arms from every quarter, bearing him down with sheer weight of numbers. Briefly, the dwarf considered intervening in the fight. He doubted if he'd leave even an elf to such a fate. But the soldier's screams had suddenly died into a liquid gargle, and as one the ghouls turned their rat-like face toward Olgrin. The gory object hanging from its jaws had told him that it was much too late to help the man. Olgrin listened as the scuffling noise faded away. Ghoul or phantom, whatever had made the sound was moving away from him, heading back toward the graveyard. The dwarf continued on his way, seeing the black bulk of Duke Merriman's castle looming up out of the darkness ahead. Torches flickered on the battlements, and the dwarf could make out the sentries high above. The sentries seemed competent enough, being careful to match their movements so that no quarter might remain unseen. The dwarf snarled a colorful oath under his breath. He had hoped things might go easy for him at some point during the night. Even as he cursed his luck, the gods seemed to answer Olgrin's complaint. A foul, raw smell wafted past the dwarf's nose, the stink of sewage and stagnant water. The dwarf turned from his contemplation of the castle's battlements and followed his nose. He had followed the rank stench for some time, allowing it to lead him down narrow alleys and across crumbling lanes, before he saw it, a slick of black sludge oozing from beneath the street. The dwarf hurried forward, scraping away at the muck and mud, until he exposed the stonework beneath. There could be no mistake. The slime was indeed issuing from between two of the stones. Pressing his head against the ground, Olgrin could hear the trickle of water flowing below. Surely, the underground culvert Brunner had spoken of. The dwarf lifted his axe above his head, driving it downward with all his tremendous strength. The blade of the weapon sank into the joint between the two stones, and with an exclamation of victory, Olgrin lent his entire weight into sliding the blade back and forth between the rocks. As he worried at the gap between them, the stones began to shift, crumbling apart where moss and mold had already weakened them. Before long, there was a mighty crack, and one of the rocks crumpled in upon itself, slipping into the darkness it had contained. A fountain of filth vomited from the opening, a black tar-like sludge that engulfed Olgrin from head to toe. The dwarf retreated from the deluge, vainly trying to wipe the crud from his face and beard. After several minutes, the bubbling filth subsided, whatever blockage had caused it dislodged by the change in pressure.
"Damn you, Brunner!"
Olgrin swore, slapping a cake of filth from his helmet onto the ground.
"We're going to have another discussion about the split after this,"
the dwarf decided. He sloshed his way through the abominable stream and gazed down into the culvert. It was a small tunnel, crude in the way that any man-built tunnel was bound to be. It was just wide enough for Olgrin to fit through, however, and high enough that a dwarf could walk through if he bent his body at the waist. An unpleasant prospect, but far more pleasant than crawling through the filthy tar that coated the bottom of the tunnel. Biting down his disgust, the dwarf dropped down into the culvert. The dwarf's eyes, hardened by the perpetual mark of the mines and caverns his people called home, adjusted almost instantly to the blackness about him. Realizing that his great axe was far too large to manage within the narrow confines of the sewer, Olgrin strapped the weapon to his back, opting instead for a throwing axe, gripped in each of his hands. Olgrin stopped a moment to imagine Brunner, safe and warm, within the Black Knight's Inn, far from corpse-eating ghouls, laughing ghosts, and tunnels reeking of excrement. The dwarf snarled a colorful curse on the bounty hunter's parents before beginning his trek into the darkness. He had not gone far, however, before a sound ahead of him made him stop in his tracks. It was a strange, moaning whine, somehow familiar, yet magnified in such a fashion as to be unsettling and horrible. The dwarf's keen ears could detect the sound of something sloshing through the muck ahead, the sounds pausing every time the strange whale chirp filled the tunnel, then resuming with a wet, slimy, flopping noise. The dwarf's sharp eyes could see something moving in the tunnel, closing upon him with a strange, irregular, undulating motion. Olgrin fished a match from his belt, striking it upon the cold steel of the throwing axe. The light flared up, bringing a shudder of protest from the thing before him. The dwarf could only stare at it in shock. In size it was no larger than a goat, but its shape was that of some gigantic frog. Webbed paws waved before its slimy green body, trying to ward off the light, while mammoth black eyes blinked shut. Olgrin had only a moment to take in the shape of the tunnel monster, for the huge mouth that sprawled beneath its head snapped open, and something wet and leathery wrapped itself about his hand, extinguishing the match. The dwarf struggled to maintain his footing as the loathsome frog began to retract its tongue, pulling the bounty killer toward its cavernous mouth. The slime coating the floor gave poor purchase for his feet, and it was with a cry of frustration that Olgrin slammed down onto his side. From this prone position, the dwarf slashed upward at the amphibian's ensnaring tongue, striking it in a glancing blow with his first attack. Instantly, the dwarf felt his hand release, as the injured tongue snapped back into the frog's mouth. The dwarf could hear the flop splash of the giant frog as it retreated back in the tunnel, no doubt to find prey that didn't bite back. The dwarf lifted himself from the slime, recovering the hand axe he had lost during the brief combat when the frog's tongue had wrapped itself about his hand.
"Oh, yes," the dwarf grumbled. "We are most definitely going to discuss that split."
The now dreaded whale chirp resumed, this time sounding from the darkness behind the dwarf. With an air of weary disgust, Olgrin turned to face the approaching monster. The whale chirp of the second giant frog was soon joined by others, singing out from the gloom beyond it.
"Damn you, Brunner!"
Olgrin snarled as he prepared for the attack. The room in which Gobineau awoke was cold and dark, and had the distinctive smell of an old latrine. The rogue groaned as his senses returned to him, and the pounding inside his skull began anew. He tried to move a hand to press down on his throbbing head, but found that they were held, bound to the stone wall behind him by thick iron chains. The bandit licked his swollen lips. Obviously, Merrimond was taking no chances with him. Things had seemed to be going so very well. He'd gotten into Musilon without too much trouble, managing to avoid the more thickly populated slums and their perpetually hostile denizens. There were still enough men in the city that remembered him, and had not become quite so desperate to murder him indiscriminately. One of these old acquaintances had led Gobineau by the safest route to Merriman's castle on the edge of the city. The Duke had permitted him entry into his castle without even any sort of haggling on Gobineau's part. It had truly seemed Merriman was pleased to see him after all these years. Then things had gone wrong. It had started when the Duke had personally offered Gobineau a cup of wine. Instead of placing it in the rogue's hand, the Duke had smashed it against the side of his head, dropping Gobineau to the floor. Then the kicking had started, and the Duke was quickly joined by a dozen or so of his men. Somewhere along the way, he'd mercifully lost consciousness, to awaken within what must be Merriman's dungeon. He'd have to talk to Tiza, try to get word to her of his predicament. Gobineau was certain that she'd be able to soothe her husband's temper and arrange to have him released from the dungeons. "I would not entertain that particular hope," a soft, melodious voice spoke from the shadows. Gobineau lifted his head, seeing a tall, slender figure illuminated by the light of a single candle standing in the doorway of his cell. As his eyes adjusted to the feeble light, Gobineau could see that it was a woman, garbed in a heavy cloak of red cloth fringed in fox fur. The woman's details were sharp and noble, and chilling in their impossible perfection of beauty. The long hair that hung about her shoulders caught the light like spun gold, and her eyes, impossibly, seemed of no less vibrant a hue. Gobineau had never seen one before, but he was certain that he looked upon the face of one of the fey folk, the mysterious elves of tale and legend.
Why should I not have hope? The rogue asked. Is that not the right of every prisoner?
The impossibly perfect lips drew back in a soft smile.
Yes, but your own hope is impossible,
the woman told him.
Have you not wondered why Duke Merriman received you in such a manner?
As she voiced her question, the light from the candle narrowed, shining out like the beam of a lighthouse. The ray of light settled upon a skeleton shackled to the wall, not 3 feet from where Gobineau was imprisoned. The necklace that hung about the skeleton's neck stirred memories.
It seems the Duke forgot to feed her, Gobineau commented. I hope he doesn't have the same in mind for me. Starvation is a pretty unpleasant way to go.
I should not worry about it, the elf told him. After learning of your tryst with his wife, the Duke has had many years to reflect upon exactly what he will do to you. I am certain that it will make starving look rather appealing.
Gobineau spent a moment imagining just what plans Duke Merriman might be considering, then decided that he certainly didn't want to be around for any of them. He tried to straighten himself as much as the shackles would allow, favoring the strange elf woman with his most ingratiating smile. He hoped that his face was not too badly bruised as to spoil the effect.
You know, I am not an entirely impoverished man, Gobineau told her. A bright, bold lass like yourself might make a good deal for herself if she were to help me.
The elf laughter was light, like the tinkling of tiny bells.
You spoke much in your delirium, she said. I'd sooner trust a serpent to watch over a songbird. Yet it is possible that you can help me. In your fever, you said you were being hunted by someone. I would hear more about him.
"And why should I tell you anything?" Gobineau demanded. The elf laughed again.
"Because, as Duke Merriman's enchantress, the exact manner of your passing has been left for me to devise. How inventive your death is will depend upon how much you tell me, and whether your information pleases me."
The elf witch's voice dropped into a low whisper that carried with it an overwhelming aura of command.
"Tell me what you know of the man they call Brunner."